Recently, I came across a profound spiritual insight. It comes from the 31st chapter of the book of Jeremiah, which reads, "This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. I will place my law within them and write it upon their hearts." Now, this on its own is an incredibly evocative image, but that's not what I find so profound. What makes God writing his law on our hearts such that it will end up within us so profound is that it isn't until our hearts break that his law can actually seep into our hearts. That it isn't until we fail or we experience some sort of defeat or loss or brokenness that God's law can actually settle in us. He writes his law on our hearts, but his law cannot seep into our hearts until our hearts are broken. You see, this is what Lent is really all about. That at some point in each of our lives, maybe not yet for some of you, maybe not today, maybe not this Lent or this year, or even this decade, but at some point in your life, to reach spiritual maturity, you're going to have to experience a broken heart. Not because God is happy when we're sad, or because we're defined by our heartbreaks, but for the express purpose of making it possible for God's law to move from just being on our hearts to being in our hearts, which of course is what all this church stuff is all about anyway. This is what I kept coming back to this week as I considered our gospel passage, the story of the man born blind. Now, the healing itself would certainly be worth preaching about. I mean, this idea of God who formed us out of clay in the beginning makes clay again out of his spittle to recreate this man born blind. I mean, that's a fascinating image, isn't it? Or I could preach about the curious reaction of the people who couldn't believe that this man born blind would ever be eligible for any of God's graces. For them, his being born blind was a sign that he was a sinner, and sinners are always separated from God. I could preach on that, because if we really admit it, we're not much different today. People who use drugs or get DUIs, or people on the news for making bad mistakes, or people convicted of crimes, or people who cause problems in the community, we almost always peg them as sinners, separated from God. How easily we become the Pharisees in this passage. And that would be a powerful homily for today, for sure. I could even preach on the sin of blaming the parents for the man's misfortune. How we are much quicker to blame than we are to have mercy. But what I think is actually the most intriguing thing of this wonderful story is the idea that it was the man who was blind who ended up being able to see, and those who were the presumed enlightened who ended up blind. This is the real story of this passage. Bishop Robert Barron has a perfect way of explaining this spiritual phenomenon. He talks about pointillism. Pointillism is a style of painting made popular in the latter half of the 1800s where the artist literally paints a picture by applying tiny dots of color onto the canvas with a brush. The painter doesn't brush the image on there. He or she applies points of color, dots of color. One after another, millions of dots of paint. And when the artist is finished, if you get right up to the painting within inches, you have no idea what the artist has painted. It's just a bunch of nondescript dots of color. But what's remarkable about pointillism is that when you step back 5, 10, 30 feet, the image becomes totally clear. From not seeing when you're right up close to it, to seeing only by distancing yourself from it. This is what it's like with our relationship with God. This is what it was like for the man born blind. The closer he came to God, the less he could see him, and the more he needed God to restore his sight. And oddly enough, the closer the Pharisees thought they were getting to God, the less they could actually see him, and they refused to be healed of their blindness. We normally think, whether we like it or not, that the Pharisees are the ones who can see best, the perceived leaders, the holiest people, the most connected people, the supposed experts in religion, those presumably closest to God. Now, there's no doubt that experts in their field might have an incredible knowledge of that field. Scientists, mathematicians, doctors. I mean, I can't fix someone's bad knee. Most of you couldn't do it either. But there's a deeper knowledge that can't be learned, and there is a deeper holiness in life that can't be learned either. And this interplay between the blind man and the Pharisees illustrates this truth perfectly. In my experience as a priest, it's always been that the closer we're drawn to God, the less we feel near him. I mean, it's ironic. You go to Mass every day, and it could actually be that you feel God's presence less. The closer you're up next to him, the harder he is to grasp. Think about marriage. Those of you who are married, when you first fall in love, it's so clear, isn't it? Then when you get married and you live life together and you see each other every single day, you wake up one day and wonder, who is this person I married? This is how it is in the priesthood too. When I first went to seminary, the first 2 or 3 months were so clear. Now not as much. But that's exactly what God is like. Chesterton would put it this way. We must look at something familiar long enough and deeply enough until what is familiar becomes unfamiliar again. This is how we respect something. The Pharisees were so disrespectful to God, and the blind man was so reverent to this nearness that he had with God. This is what it must be like with us and God. Or put another way, this is really important what I'm about to say. In order to see God, we must be willing to be blind to God. It's true. When we look at modern secular society, we live in a time where we know more about things than ever before in history. And yet, our society finds it harder and harder to see and know God. Isn't that interesting? You would think that the more advanced we become, we would be more aware of the presence of God. But it's just the opposite. The more advanced we come, the less aware our society becomes of God. But it's true, and it's really important in the spiritual life. St. John of the Cross would say it this way. We will always know more about God by what we don't know about God than by what we do know about God. And it's so obvious in the story that Deacon Mark just proclaimed for us. Those who apparently knew the most about God's plans ended up knowing the least about God's plans, the Pharisees. And those who knew the least about God, the blind man, ended up knowing the most about God. This is how it must be with us and God. There's a beautiful spiritual notion that runs throughout Father Merton's writings that our lives are a battle. Your life is a battle between the true self and the false self. The false self is the self that we create in life so that we will have pride and self-possession. The true self is the self known only to God. Not even the self that you know, the self that only God knows. The world wants us to cultivate the false self. God wants us to cultivate the true self. And therein lies the great irony of the human condition. The more we try to make of ourselves, the less we actually exist. This is what's happening in our story today. The blind man is your true self. I'm going to say that again. The blind man in the story is you. He's your true self, my true self, unable to see God on his own power. The Pharisees in the story are you and me, our false self, thinking that we've apprehended God in such a way that we actually know him more than those other people know him. My friend Jim Finley writes, commenting on Merton's spirituality, this is so beautiful, listen to this. Our false self dwells in a darkness which it proclaims to be true light. He's talking about John's gospel here. And the light shines in the darkness, and darkness grasps it not. So Finley explains, our faith is easily bewildered, confused, and actually lost in a false light that it will never comprehend. This light, however, becomes true and is intuitively recognized by our true self as the light that restores our vision and heals us and returns us to God. In other words, the blind man, our true self, was way more aware of the true light because he was blind. And the Pharisees, our false self, claiming to see what is true, were lost in their own misunderstanding of the light. This is what it must be with you and God. No one wants his heart broken. I don't want my heart to be broken. I want my heart to be happy and whole. But I know that I won't be completely happy until my heart breaks and God is able to seep into me deeper through the cracks of my broken heart. No one wants to be blind. I want to see. We all want to see. But it won't be until we recognize our blindness that God will give us the sight to see him. In 15 minutes, we will be literally present to God in the bread and wine. And we will see that bread and wine, things that we can see, things that we can apprehend. We understand what bread and wine is, things that we can know on our own power. But left to our own power, we will be blind to the body and the blood. It will be in our blindness that we will be invited by God to see him in the bread and the wine. Father Merton once wrote this. Think about your life. Think about your faith. Think about the spiritual journey on which you find yourself. He wrote this. The more perfect faith is faith in the darkness. The more perfect faith, the darker it becomes. Our certainty increases only in this obscurity, with anguish and even material doubt, because it's not easy to be in a place in which our powers have nothing on their own on which to rely. It is in this deepest darkness, he says, that we most fully encounter God on earth, because this is only the time that our minds are liberated from our own false sense of seeing. It is only then that we are filled with his infinite light, which is pure darkness to our intellect. At this inexplicable moment on the spiritual journey, the deepest night becomes day, and faith finally turns to understanding. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.